Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you're joining us from all over the world. Welcome to Web3 Warriors, episode 98, featuring Liana Adams and Juan Montez in the building. Welcome, welcome, Liana and Juan. How are you doing today?
Hey,
doing great, doing great. Good morning, everybody. Good morning to the metaverse.
Good morning.
Good morning. I know good it's evening. Not morning on your side of the planet, Liana.
Well, it is technically
just hitting the midnight.
Past midnight.
Nice, nice. There we go. Still morning in my side of the planet as well, in the central time zone. But appreciate you guys joining, Liana. I was able to see some of your amazing art, and it was awesome to be able to connect with you in NYC recently. And Juan Montez, actual New Yorker. Awesome to be able to go and connect with you and your community, and really be able to meet some of your friends and really get the vibe of New York, and being able to connect that with the NFT community and Web3 and blockchain. It was really exciting. So thank you both for joining. So I want to thank everyone for joining. Cool. Happy 420. Happy having or havening, however you describe it, to all those partaking today. It's an interesting 420 for sure. So thank you for joining. My name is David Chroma. I go by Chrome in the metaverse, and I'm the host for Web3 Warriors. And today, as I mentioned, we're really going to be looking at NFT NYC 2024, which all three of us were a part of and took part in to different degrees, and were involved with some satellite events that were really successful, I would say, and amazing learning lessons. And we were onboarding people, we were having conversations about the NFT community. We got to meet Kane Mayfield in real life and listen to some hip hop, listen to some of his stand-up comedy, which was really amazing. So really just taking a lot of the experiences that we've had, maybe in Clubhouse, maybe on Twitter spaces, and bringing that into the real world was just a really eye-opening experience. This was now my third year at NFT.NYC. So I'm just going to give a little bit of break down on my thoughts and my experience, and then I definitely want to turn it over to Liana and Juan and get some of the reflections from them as well. And the goal here is to really highlight the importance of bringing what we're doing on the blockchain and what we're doing in the digital world into the physical world, and how that kind of helps make things more real, but also helps impact people in a more direct way, I think. So personally, I was actually part of a panel with Pilar Cote, who's unable to join us today, unfortunately, but we were talking about storytelling, NFT culture, and the new creator economy on the blockchain at the actual NFT NYC 2024 conference. And so that was pretty awesome. It was the first time I actually was able to speak on stage for a panel at NFT.NYC. And we actually onboarded somebody into the spatial metaverse, which you're seeing on the screen right now, actually, which is an art gallery that we set up for one of the satellite events that we had going with art from the community. You can actually see one of Liana's beautiful pieces, a dragon piece over my shoulder in the metaverse here. But that's really what we were talking about. And it was interesting because one of the conversations with the guy that we actually onboarded into Spatial, he had never heard of Spatial or even the concept of using the metaverse for an NFT gallery. So, after our main kind of panel discussion, he actually wanted us to show him how it works. So we actually had a breakout session, and we ended up setting him up with his own Spatial account and getting him into the metaverse. And he kind of had his mind blown. So just for that one experience, it was definitely worth it. And we did get a lot of good feedback from some of the other people that were there kind of listening to the conversation. But what I found really interesting is this guy had actually been in Bitcoin since 2017. So in some ways, he was kind of OG. But on the NFT side, on the blockchain, or on the kind of metaverse side of the conversation, he was not as familiar with what we're kind of doing over here, So it was a very interesting kind of snapshot of the fact that you can actually see people who have been in crypto for a while who have not actually tuned into the NFT conversation, have not actually tuned into how you can use art and monetize your art on the blockchain in the metaverse, and really create these new opportunities. So it was a really eye-opening experience. That was the positive piece for sure when looking at the conference itself. I also got to sit in on Liana's panel, which was really awesome. She had Mike Mongo there with her, really talking about the power of Web3 and the community power, and the idea that, like, the tools are powerful and bringing people together in a real way that's making a real impact. So I'll let Liana speak to that a little bit more. But overall, one thing I will say about the atmosphere of NFT NYC 2024 compared to previous years, it was a bit quieter, you know. Definitely seemed like some of the bigger money, some of the bigger NFT projects we're all familiar with, like the Bored Apes and the Nouns and those kind of bigger ones, did not bother, you know, spending the however many thousands of dollars are required to get a booth at NFT NYC proper. And so it was quite light. It was not as, you know, populated and kind of bumping as it was the last 2 years that I was there. So I will say that, and maybe, you know, I'd love to hear what Juan and Liana think about the reasons behind that. But I, you know, it's interesting because to be doing it for so long, you would think it would be kind of steady growth. And if something in your pricing or something in your marketing is not working with these big brands in the NFT space, maybe you got to switch it up. That would be my thoughts. But it was an interesting kind of contrast to previous years. Aside from that, definitely the satellite events, you know, made it all worth it. Being able to go down to PubKey and connect with Kane Mayfield and Liana in person and Juan Montez and a bunch of other friends from the community was just amazing. Being able to actually connect with Skrilla, shout out to Skrilla, you know, we were puffing outside and just like, it was so real, you know, that was just amazing. So being able to actually meet with some of the legends in the space at these satellite events was awesome. Shout out to Kane Mayfield, also had his first live stand-up comedy, which a bunch of people from the community have been telling him to get into comedy because he's hilarious and we're all enjoying, you know, his antics on Twitter Spaces and Clubhouse. But he actually did a real stand-up comedy set and it was amazing. The whole place was loving it. It was really funny. So shout out to Kane. Yeah, we'll be having him on the show in the near future as well. And then I also want to give a shout out to Andres, who was not able to join us. He had his MetaMix concept, which actually took place at two different events. So this is where the IRL event is blending with the metaverse and bringing in kind of the metaverse as an experience. And it was really successful. He had one at Sour Mouse and he had one at the Huntington Free Library, where you were actually onboarding people in the Bronx into blockchain, essentially, and crypto, metaverse, NFTs, at a very interesting location, which was the Huntington Free Library, which actually had history in the abolitionist movement. It had a bunch of amazing art, like actual original drawings of Abe Lincoln and other important Americans in history. So as a junkie of politics, political junkie myself, and a history junkie, that was really amazing to me to be able to attend that in the Bronx and see, you know, shout out to Bronx Crypto, shout out to BioMeta, really making an impact in the space and showing people, you know, the value of the technology. And the event at Sour Mouse was also really fun. We had Juan Montez there kind of showing his Skull Hunters project and everything they're working on. So that's just a little bit of background on my experience at NFT NYC and really how I was able to pull value from it, and definitely look forward to going back again and really just increasing that impact, right? Increasing that kind of IRL footprint that we're making out here, you know? So that's a little bit of background on the experience and really just kind of settling in. I also want to give a shout out to OD Labs, our Canadian brand, fellow brand from Toronto. They did an amazing big event out in NYC where they had a lot of XR art. They had AR, metaverse showing on the screen. They had their digital assets being kind of used in all these different ways. Very immersive art experience. So shout out to OD Labs because that was amazing. So with that, I'll stand back and I want to hear from Liana first and then we're going to turn it over to Juan. But welcome, friends. I'm so glad that you're able to join. Maybe Liana, if you could start with just a brief intro, you know, what you're up to in the space and Web3. And then we'd love to hear your thoughts on kind of NYC and specifically what was kind of the main highlight of the event. So thank you for joining, Liana. How are you doing?
Thanks for having me. Well, I suppose, you know, I mean, the past few years, my journey has really been about cultivating a humanity first culture within communities. So I work, you know, in the intersection of, like, you know, art, technology, social impact, and culture. And I kind of just do a lot of stuff.
No doubt. So going to NYC, what was kind of your main goal and what was the highlight of it for you?
Oh, man, like, just getting there was a big win, right? You know, I mean, it's 25 hours of travel. And I thought I wasn't going to make it. But then a last minute sponsor decided to, you know, sponsor my flight and my accommodation, nice. Which was great. So that kind of helped me yeah, so in the end, like, it was really last minute. It's like, yep, I'm coming to New York, you know?
Made it work. And the visa piece, yeah. Right? You had to sort out the visa and get that all approved as well.
Yeah, so it's a bit of a, you know, process, right? But definitely when I got into New York, I mean, the like getting around was difficult for me, you know. I mean, I was just very confused, you know, where everything was and the streets and but you know, I was definitely really excited to get into NFT NYC to speak. Unfortunately, everyone on my panel dropped out.
Yeah, that was an issue for us as well. Half of our panel was not able to make it, unfortunately.
Yeah, but, you know, luckily for me, NFT NYC managed to get Mike Mongo to do a fireside chat with me. And it was great, you know. It was really interesting meeting Mike in person. I mean, I didn't expect him to be that tall, but he was, yes.
He's a pretty tall dude.
But, you know, it's really nice to connect, right? Because we've been in the same rooms and spaces, like, you know, back in Clubhouse. And yeah, so the topic of the conversation was Beyond Pixels, Shaping the Future of Culture. So pretty much like what you said, you know, is about getting out from the devices, you know, getting out from the pixels into real life, right? And that's how we can shape the future of culture. So, yeah, I mean, I had a great time connecting with all of you. I mean, I have to say it was a lot.
At the end of the week, you're kind of like, what just happened, right? You got to kind of step back and just be like, okay.
And then one had to be like my GPS, right?
With pleasure. It was, you know.
It took me 2 hours to get to Oculus, right? Like I was supposed to go to the Hug event, and yeah, what was supposed to be 15 minutes?
About it took 20 me 2 minutes, hours.
Yeah. 2 hours. Yeah. So. Yeah, so one was my GPS.
It's nice having those resident New Yorkers there to help you out, right?
Yeah. It's like, dude.
she sent me a message a couple of days before she headed out to New York, and she was like, hey, listen, I have no idea where I'm going to be or where anything is. Like, do you mind if I could just... And I was like, listen, here's my number. Don't even tweet me. Just call me. Shoot me a text. You know, I'll be more than glad to help you, you know, navigate through the city, because I know for me, whenever I'm in, you know, new cities, new countries, you know, it can be really overwhelming, especially mm-hmm. dealing with public transportation. That can be a nightmare. So I said, you know what, anything I could do to help, you know, Liana's been around us since, for me, I feel like it's the beginning, you know, like when I first got on the Clubhouse, mm-hmm. I feel like you guys were already there. I always felt like the new person. And now it's like when new people are coming in, you know, it's kind of funny because now we're like inner circle. You know what I'm saying? Like
we definitely got the tight circle at this point.
Yeah. So it's always like this surreal feeling for me, right? Because I felt like when I got there, I knew no one, and you guys all had this amazing rapport with each other, right? Like it was just like chemistry and banter, and it was just like this amazing space that I just fell into, like accidentally. I don't know how it happened. I think I followed like Rook in there from hearing him talking like a crypto space, because I very much like the guy that you onboarded came into NFTs through crypto. So when I originally my Clubhouse experience was producer rooms, music rooms, and stock and crypto rooms, you know, as you know, kind of just looking for information. And I don't know how I fell into neighborhood jewelry. I just know that my first time there, I was like, I need to continue to come here. I love it here. And
these are my people.
You know, like, the neighborhood is the people. That's a fact.
That's it. The jewelry is the knowledge. Let's go.
That's a fact. Yeah.
So one, turning it to you then, you know, give a little bit of background on yourself, what you're building in Web3. I know we talked to you about Skull Hunters not too long ago, a few weeks back.
Yes.
And you know, you kind of unleashed or unveiled the new 3D Skull Hunter side that you're working on. Maybe share a little bit of background on that. And then I'd love to hear your highlight from the NFT NYC week as well.
Yeah, so I'm one. I am the artist and founder of Skull Hunters NFTs. We are an Ethereum-based project on and you know it's a collection of art and skulls that I've drawn in my kind of new direction as a digital artist. I kind of always, you know, physical artist, and I always kind of drew. And then around 2020, I kind of took a pivot into digital art. And a friend of mine told me that I should look into putting my art on a blockchain. Had no idea what that meant. Fast forward, you know, I'm selling NFTs, I'm building a community, I'm, you know, adding value and utility to a collection, and all of these things that I had no idea, you know, a couple of years ago existed. So it's very much a kind of like a new thing for me, you know. But as far as Skull Hunters 3D, I actually partnered with a digital artist by the name of Angelina Taylor. She's an amazing 3D artist. We spent about a year kind of building out this amazing 3D collection. You know, I kind of just conceptualized these stories and these pictures in my head, and she very much brought them to life. And we were able to debut and premiere some of the art at Sour Mouse for the MetaMix event, which was Wednesday, the first day of NFT NYC. So that was fun, you know, because it was kind of like NFT NYC started with so much, you know. It was like that Wednesday, Pigeons in New York had an event that I was at previously, and they just kind of invited a bunch of music Web3 people to their studio. They have like this really dope studio in East Orange, and I was able to kind of like go there and work with some artists and produce some music. So there will be some music NFTs coming out produced by me in the near future.
Let's go.
I did some stuff with Nessie. I did some stuff with Smarts, and it was really dope. It was kind of like this real big creative session. They had like three different rooms going simultaneously. So, you know, artists were kind of like popping in and out of different rooms. I was producing in one room. They were recording in another. Artists were writing in another. And then they had this big networking lounge where people were just kind of like kicking it in between. So that was fun. And then they do, they have a Twitter space called Chop Cheese that they do every Wednesday. And they actually did it live in the studio, which was nice. That was a dope experience. Nice. We got to do that, and then from there I kind of jumped in an Uber straight to the city to, you know, come connect with Liana and Angelina for the Sour Mouse event. So that was fun, you know, because, you know, I'm in an Uber like from Jersey to New York. It's like an hour ride. It's pouring rain, and like we're like talking like NFTs and music and platforms, and it's like, no, don't put it on there. Oh, don't put it here, put it there. And, you know, like, so it's kind of funny, like when you're talking with multiple Web3 people, because you get a lot of perspective, especially for like music artists. And I'm very like set on how I feel about NFT platforms and stuff like that. So, you know, I'm like, you don't need to put it on a music NFT platform. Any platform is a music NFT platform, yeah. You know, so, you know, having those conversations and then getting to, you know, into the city, and then finally, like, it was like pouring rain. We got to the front of the Javits Center. It was like 7 o'clock. They were like kicking everyone out because clearly the conference was over. I guess I didn't find out until afterwards that I guess Wednesday was a very light day for speakers. Nobody showed up for their panels.
Wow. That's wild. People were stuck on the plane or something.
Well, like, I heard like some people had like flight delays. A lot of people had, because of the weather, of course. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of people just didn't want to make the commute from Midtown all the way, you know, over to the West Side because of, you know, the weather. It was really,
it was ugly out there. It was weird.
It was bad.
It was bad.
I came from Winnipeg. Bad. I'm up in Canada. I landed there. I walk outside and I'm like, yo, this is colder than where I came from. What the hell is happening? Mm-hmm. Like every other time I went to NYC, it was like, oh, it was nice and like summery compared to where I had come from, you know, cause Winnipeg's usually still cold in April, but damn, I was disappointed, man. It was cold AF, man. It was crazy.
Yeah. And I just came from Puerto Rico.
It was
so the day windy, before. Bro. Oh, wow. So I went from like 80-degree weather to 40-degree weather like this. I'm like, shh. Yeah. So, but
I come from Asia.
Right.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, Liana was hurting for sure. I had to be the wind cover a couple times there. I was like, damn.
Yeah, listen, it was funny because after we left the Javits Center, me and Angelina met up with Liana, and it was funny because I was like, oh, we'll walk to the train and, you know, we'll take the subway into, you know, into the Lower East Side, you know, just to kind of like, oh, you know, let's do it'll be an experience. Right. And we got like two blocks and we were like, no, we're going to take an Uber. It's cold. It's rainy.
Yeah, it was not walking New York weather for sure.
It definitely wasn't. So we piled into an Uber. It was, and then we met up with you guys, and Wednesday was dope. I had a good time presenting my art. I had a good time, you know, kind of talking about what we're rolling out with Skull Hunters 3D, and just connecting with you guys, like having everyone in the same room, you know, after all, I feel like all of these years was buildups to those moments, you know, like, so having that experience where it's like, you know, when we first saw each other all in the same room, and then even like going from there to Pub Key. And it was like, when we were all like, it was like, you know, to have the Clubhouse gang all in a room together, you know, you had King, it was incredible.
Yeah, Skrilla, Kane. There are a few people there I didn't even realize till after I was on a chat with them, and I was like, "Yo, you were there too." It's wild, man. But it's awesome just that we do have that many people. I want to highlight a couple things you mentioned. So Pigeons of New York, shout out to that team because they had an awesome yacht party as well on the Friday night, which was dope. That was lit. Yeah. And the fact that we were actually streaming their event that you mentioned from Wednesday at the same time as our event at Sour Mouse. So right now I'm showing a highlight from the Twitch stream that we had. So as you can see, actually, there's different corners of the metaverse. We had Voxels showing, we had Decentraland showing, then we had the Pigeons of New York with their sound session showing, and then we also had Sour Mouse showing up. And so we really kind of were mashing up a bunch of different things. Shout out to Vita TV as well, which we're streaming into the metaverse on right now. But yeah, shout out to Pigeons of New York. They were doing some big things out there, and they are an actual New York-based NFT brand that is doing some pretty big things across America, really. Like when I went to Miami, Art Basel Miami, they also had a big event down there, which was pretty lit. And it was pretty good times. Yeah, Marstein and that huge, like, they had a bunch of art all over the walls, and it was just it was a vibe. It was definitely a big party. Same thing with OD Labs, actually. So that's an interesting point. You know, this recurring brands that are really making the point of having fun and having like a big satellite event next to these, not even necessarily Web3 events. It's kind of funny how Art Basel, there's a lot of us who see it as an NFT or an NFT event, but it is really just an art event. And when you go to these art events around Art Basel, most of them are not talking about NFTs. Most of them are not really blockchain related. But Pigeons of New York did a big event there. OD Labs did a really big event down in Miami as well. So it was cool to see kind of both of those brands repeat, you know, their events in New York and still be able to do it successfully and actually kind of improved over what they had done in Miami. So especially in OD Labs' case, it was quite an eye-opening kind of art experience that they had going there. So awesome. Glad you brought that up. Pigeons of New York, shout out to them. Yeah, just a lot of really cool brands doing big things. So looking back at kind of the week, right? Leon, I'm going to turn it back to you. You know, like, do you think that they're, first of all, what were your impressions of the conference? Because this was your first time attending the conference, right? What were your impressions of the actual conference? And then I'd love to hear a little bit more about your talk with Mike Mongo as well.
Yeah, I have a feeling like the conference, they've just got way too many talks happening at the same time, right? And I felt like, you know, that was just spreading it a bit too thin, you know, because the other conferences I've been to, everything's pretty much like in one spot, you know, in one main stage. But for this, I mean it was very well run, but it just there was a slight disconnect, I felt, you know. I can't really put my finger on it, but that's a slight disconnect. But, you know, but I have to say they were really helpful when my panel just dropped out.
Yeah, right? That's interesting you mentioned that, because I thought that you just went to Mike and were like, yo, Mike, I need help. But you're saying NFT, the actual organizers did help you out and actually pulled they pulled Mike into it. Yeah. So that's cool.
They pulled Mike into it, you know? And so because they were calling Mike and then Mike came in, it's like, oh, okay, great. You know, you saved my day.
It was a great chat. I was glad I was able to make it because I was kind of running around and I was like, oh, I got to make it to Liana's talk. And that was on the Thursday, right? Thank you.
No, on this on Wednesday.
It was Wednesday. Okay, yeah. So it was the same day as mine,
I guess. It was after yours.
I was
No, our talk was Wednesday, Pilar and I.
Wednesday, the first day, yeah.
Okay.
It was just a few hours in between, I think, and I had kind of trying to multitask running around, but yeah, it was awesome that we made it back.
Yeah, and it was really nice to see everyone, you know, in the room. I also met up with like Jimmy Albert, like he's an artist, and I think you might know him.
Yeah, I'm familiar. I don't think I met him IRL, though. That would have been cool. there's so many people like that. That I was like, oh, you were there? Oh, damn. Like, you know?
Yeah. You know, I went into like the speaker's lounge, right? Like the artist speaker's lounge.
Right.
And I couldn't find him, right? Because there were quite a few people. So I, you know, started doing my thing like, Jimmy, started shouting out for his name.
It worked out.
And everything just worked out. Yeah. It was good, you know? So, I mean, I heard last year they didn't have coffee, you know, and there wasn't a lot of food in the speaker's lounge. But this year they, you know, the speaker's lounge like had coffee and food, so you know, I guess that's a bit of an improvement, but other than that, it's I just felt like it was a bit too
did it feel kind of corporate stuffy.
a bit tiny bit.
I just feel like it's like, if you're gonna have the biggest NFT event, like arguably in the world, which is kind of how they bill it, right? It does seem odd, again, compared to the last 2 years, when you're not having buy-in from all, like, pretty much all the biggest brands that we're familiar with when it comes to kind of the real NFT culture, you know. And Pilar and I were talking about NFT culture on the blockchain specifically, and you know, it's, you can't be the kind of main event of the NFT community and not have certain brands kind of involved with it. At least that's my perception. And I feel like it's the pricing. I feel like they're just not meeting the market, and they may be overvalued what they're offering. And now enough people have kind of seen, oh, I'm not getting enough return on investment on this, you know. And shout out to Cass Vegas as well. I was able to have a brief chat with her when I caught her at the OD Labs event, and she was mentioning how, you know, she had conversations with their leadership and really just not surprised by kind of the way that brands have kind of turned their back on them now. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, going into the future. I think it does open up the opportunity for another NFT event to be the actual big kind of cultural center, because I think the satellite events end up having the culture, like the real kind of arts, the more art focused people attending the satellite events compared to the main conference. So what do you think like a main learning lesson out of that? Like, how do you think maybe they adapt or shift if they want to keep their position kind of as the leading NFT event?
Well, I think also, like, you know, it's great to have all of us speaking and stuff, right? But then 25 minutes for a panel discussion. I mean, we talk about NFTs and Web3 every day, right? So and it's not to say like, oh, you can't learn anything from the conference. You definitely can, especially if you're new to the space. But I think there needs to be some kind of like a balance, right? Like they need to cater for the newbies, and they also need to cater for those who have been in the space like for some time, right? And I felt like there wasn't a lot of like workshops, maybe, you know. I think we would benefit from having, you know, maybe some brands like, you know, demoing or just having a workshop, you know, so that we get to try things like, you know, intangible stuff. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I think, you know, it's a bit too spread out. Like, I think they just need to concentrate, like, all the talks, you know, maybe whittle it down and have like maybe just a few stages and not too many stages. And also, you know, if the whole point of the conference is to network, no one was really networking there, right?
I mean, there was a couple of the breakout sessions. Like, yeah. I'm looking at, like, our talk and the fact that people asked us to, like, make sure we host the breakout so we could show them the spatial space, and then we onboarded that one dude. So there was a little, you know, there's a little bit of networking.
Yeah, there was a bit of networking. But I think, you know, if we're talking about a conference, usually there'll be people trying to connect the dots, right? Like, yeah. Oh, you know, have you met so-and-so? And then, like, you know, just getting people to connect with each other, right? So I think that was lacking. And yeah, other than that, you know, maybe have better instructions on how to get there. And
yeah, I don't know. I think when you're new to New York, it just comes with the territory.
For newbies like me, right? Yeah. It's like, I was so lost, you know? And then with all the side events as well that was happening at the same time, it's like, oh man, do I want to be there or do I want to be here? Like, you know, you get so conflicted, right? Mm-hmm. But other than that, yeah, I mean,
no, those are good takeaways for sure. One, what are your thoughts? You've been to a few of these now, right?
Yeah, I feel like every year the attendance kind of dwindles down a bit,
and that could be the market, right?
From my experience, excuse me.
I said it could be the market, maybe. Or how do you feel about that?
I don't think it's the market. I think it's the experience, right? I think my first NFT NYC was 2021, right? They did it at the Palladium in Manhattan. It was in the heart of Times Square, and for me, that one was probably the biggest. It was one stage. It's kind of like what Liana was saying. It was one stage, and it was very much tiered a certain way where it was one speaker at a time, one panel at a time. You didn't have
it was more focus, right?
Like, well, yes, because focus. Now what happens is that you don't have speakers conflicting with each other, right? Because mm-hmm. you have four or five rooms that are going at the same time, maybe even six. There's about between five and six rooms that are all going at the same time. So now the audience has to get split up between, you know, do I want to hear this do I want to hear my favorite founder, or do I want to hear this information that could be beneficial to me? And now they have to choose between which discussion they want to listen to. So I think that, you know, they're kind of like pinning their speakers against each other, which isn't necessarily good for business in the first place. Secondly, I feel like the venue is a little too big for what they're trying to do. I get it. It's the Javits Center. It's like this big staple in the city. But at the same time, I feel like they didn't have the resources.
They didn't need all that space, bro.
Last year, maybe, because last year they had more things going on. They had more sponsors. There was like a bigger, there was more vendors. This year I noticed like there was a very huge absence in vendors. And we've had this conversation on Clubhouse where the people that I feel like get the bottom of the barrel are the people that pay to be vendors at NFT NYC. Because a lot of people ultimately end up walking past those booths. They don't get the engagement that they're paying for. Mm-hmm. And, you know, based off of what they're paying to be there, it's kind of like you're better off getting a general admission ticket and networking and kind of like working the rooms. That's the better situation and scenario, you know, because ultimately I felt like this year the huge attendance were artists that were going there to see their art displayed, speakers that were going there to speak, and then there was a small percentage of people that actually paid for conference tickets. You know, walking through there, it was very it didn't have that same excitement that it had the years previous. Mm-hmm. And even when you go like that first floor area where they had that huge exhibit that took up like most of the room, you know, they needed something big to fill that space because there was an absence in vendors. There was an absence in companies that wanted to come out and actually pay marketing dollars to when they could ultimately just do what I said, just kind of go in there. And I think being away from Midtown and being all the way on the west side takes away from the excitement as well, because part of the excitement for a lot of the people that were coming into town was being in the heart of the city, and now kind of having to separate themselves from everything that's going on to come to the conference area kind of like pulls away from that. So I think that that plays into it as well. And I also feel like a lot of people don't want to pay the money to go to the conference when the real excitement is the satellite events. Yeah. The real excitement is what's going to happen after the conference ends. You know, who's working on what. And even with the absence of like some of the bigger projects like 2022, like Cool Cats had an amazing exhibit. You know, without the Bored Apes and you know, the what was the other one? Like Doodles and all these big projects that come and do like NFT NYC events, even with like OD Labs, like that event, I didn't make it there, but I heard it was incredible. Archive XYZ did an event at the same venue that the Hug event was at. They had an amazing event there.
That was Oculus, right?
That was at the Oculus.
Check out that Oculus. And that's connected to like the new Freedom Tower or whatever, right? There's some connection.
It's just underneath it. It's like underneath. It's kind of like it's a subway station that plays as like a mall, and then they have like venues. Yeah. And there was a gallery in there called Canvas or Canvas 3.0 or something like that. And they had a bunch of different NFT NYC events. They had an event there called Not NFT NYC, which was bunch of physical artists that were kind of like showing, and digital artists that aren't on chain, they're just like artists. And then the Archive XYZ event, which was basically you know, kind of geared towards music artists. So like Archive XYZ is a magazine that promotes you know, anything that's happening Web3 related. Mm-hmm. And it's a physical magazine. I think that they're going digital as well. So, but I, funny enough, I know the founders. We've kind of did a bunch of speaking engagements during NFT NYC 2022, and we were kind of like we had met through another New York community called Crypto Mondays, and basically kind of like started onboarding people at different events, and we kind of like worked together briefly. So the fact that they're kind of like branding out and building up is impressive. That's for what awesome. They've done.
So Archive XYZ, that's just like a New York based magazine that just covers all things crypto, blockchain kind of thing.
Oh yeah, all things Web3.
Nice.
Like, I believe that they focus on art, on the art side of it, not necessarily like the crypto financial side of it, but and so it's funny, right? So I was at this was Thursday. I was at PubKey after the conference. I swung over to the Frogs Over Fiat event with Kane. I was, you know, kind of kicking it there with him and Mix. And
I was there for a minute too. I had to dip out the Frogs Over Fiat was at a different Pepe gallery, right? They had the most next level Pepe art I've ever seen. I was like, holy shit.
It was some real dope art there. I'm not going to lie. I was, you know, like I've seen Pepe art, and my experience with Pepe art was that it's kind of just like, oh, you know, it's like frogs, it's memes. But when I walked in that gallery and I saw the caliber of like Pepe art, I was really blown away. I'm not going to lie. I was really impressed. It was some real dope art there. So, from there we, went to PubKey, and then from PubKey, I went to the Archive XYZ event, and there, like, it was funny. I bumped into Natalie there. That's where I sent you the picture of me and Natalie, Liana, because we were at the Oculus, and, so it was kind of funny. She's like, it took Liana 2 hours to get to the Oculus from Midtown. So when I sent her a picture of me and Natalie together, and she's like, oh my God, where are you guys? I was like, I tell you to come by, but we're 2 hours away.
Yeah.
I was like, all right then. Fine.
I will say it's now my third time there, and I thought I really understood these trains, but I was trying to get to the Brooklyn Museum, ended up going in the wrong direction, and I also ended up making it like an hour and a half or 2 hours when it should have been like a 30-minute train ride. I was like, it was horrible. I was so mad. I was like, God, it took so long for me to realize I was going in the wrong direction, and then going back the other way, you just double up on everything you just did, right? And then you gotta and then you gotta make the other stretch. I was like, oh my goodness, I thought I was better at this, but apparently not. Yeah, you're not alone, Liana. You're not alone,
because Pilar definitely showed Liana this MTA subway map application that like kind of like shows you where you're going, and it actually tracks your motion. So if you're going in the wrong way, it lets you know, which I'm from New York and I didn't even know this thing existed. So
that was really useful, you know.
It was,
just going to Oculus was just a nightmare.
I really want to check out that venue, actually. It reminds me of, like, I think the last 2 years, Raven was working with one of the brands that was doing something at that venue, and I missed it, and now I missed it a third time. But I always hear about Web3 events happening there, and I still haven't made it. The Hug event, I'm curious, Liana, you did make it to that one?
Just as they were closing.
Oh, okay. Because Hug.xyz is an interesting brand, because they're one that like really focuses on helping artists, right? And that's kind of the spiel. And then I heard from a few people that were there, and you know, they had like L'Oreal as a brand, and it was as a brand sponsor, and it was very much kind of more corporate, it seemed, and less like very on-chain, very Web3. So I was just curious if you had any thoughts of that. On the screen right now, I am showing Kane Mayfield rapping in front of a DJ Pepe. And shout out to Metamix in the chat. Feel free to join on the Google chat if you'd like to, sir. And Idris as well. Idris in the
DJ
chat.
Kubert in the mask.
Yeah, Kubert in the mask, DJ Kubert represent. That's awesome. But Liana, please share a little bit about the Hug experience if you have any thoughts on that. I'm just curious about the brand, because I really like at least the stated goal of what they're about. But I've been hearing, you know, from people who have submitted art to them and people who do attend their events that they've been having some kind of, you know, a little bit of contrasting with the on-chain kind of vibes. So what were your thoughts on it?
So I think you know, they're very corporate as well, right? Like I want to say like they're disguised as Web3 but actually corporate people. I don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, as an artist, to have your art on, like, you know, to do brand licensing, that's one of the dreams, right? So in a way, they're kind of trying to achieve that. But then also, like, I'm not too sure if you've heard of Remix. So I went for a dinner just with the founders and a couple of like artists, and Cass, shout out to Cass, like she invited me.
Nice.
And it was a really nice, cozy, get together, right? Where you can really talk to people and then, you know, over food. And so they are also doing physical stuff as well. Right. But they're also going to, match, artists to a brand, to a sponsor. So I think that is, you know, I guess that, you know, like I said, you know, for licensing, the art licensing, it's great for the artists. Whether it is done in a Web3 ethos kind of way, like that's still, you know, yet to be seen, right? And I suppose, like, as long as you know, you keep true to Web3, no matter what the brand or whatever, I think it'll work, right? It's okay. You know what I mean?
I dig it. Yeah. And I think, like you're saying, exactly, there are people, you know, ultimately artists build themselves up to a space where they want brands to pay them to feature their art, right? That's not a negative thing. And I do think, you know, Hug, I believe they're connected to Zuckerberg, right? The Zuckerberg sister.
Yep.
I can't remember her name right now. Forgive me.
Randy Zuckerberg.
Randy, right.
Yeah, sorry. Randy.
So very well connected in the business space and the Silicon Valley space, right? And so I think in many ways, it's good to be able to have a little bit more of that buy-in at the community level. And regardless of the kind of contrasting kind of brand as far as like having a lot of corporations mm-hmm. there that are not on chain. I do think that still they are ultimately highlighting artists like yourself and others in the space, right? And I actually learned about them through Nyla Hayes. You know, I'm a big fan of the long necky ladies, and Nyla being a child artist who's just continuing to grow and build in the space and doing some amazing stuff, you know. So I see a lot of people that I like from the space kind of connected to them. Yeah. So I'm willing to give them, you know, the time and see where they go from here. So and I think there is a space for corporations, right? It's required, you know, if we're going to grow and build and get more adoption, as the word is, you know, the big word, mass adoption, everyone's waiting for. We'll see. So I got a picture of your Skull Hunter sticker in the wild on the screen, Juan Montez, at the Pub Key event. I see Kane Mayfield in the background off the reflection shouting at somebody. and I want to welcome Meta Dre in the building. Andres, thanks for joining. I know you're kind of mobile. How are you doing, sir?
What's up, guys? Can you hear me?
Yeah. Hello, nephew. Hey.
So what's up? Good to see you guys.
Good to see you too, bro.
Thanks for joining, bro. I would love to hear just a little bit of thoughts from yourself. Everyone's kind of shared a little bit of their experiences at NFT NYC. I did give a shout out to the MetaMix and the events at Huntington Free Library and Sour Mouse. But I know, you know, you've got a really cool kind of focus on taking the metaverse and blending it with the real life and bringing on-chain kind of knowledge to people in New York. You are another actual New Yorker along with Juan, you know. So just love to hear your thoughts and anything you want to share about kind of experiences through NFT NYC.
Yeah, I'm still recovering. it was a trip. No, I loved it. I had a great time. It's literally like being a big kid right all over again. I mean, just everything that we want to do and what we're into, and there's just, you know, not enough of it. There's so much to go see and do, and you're with all your friends and hanging out. I had a blast, and I couldn't ask to be with better people around the entire event. So thank you guys. That's, I don't have much to say. I fucking loved it. I can't wait for the next
one. And so what's the future of the MetaMix looking like, bro? And how are you feeling about kind of the events? Because honestly, both, I think, Huntington Free Library and Sour Mouse really wouldn't have been impossible without kind of the AV support that you're bringing in, you know, with a lot of the equipment and a lot of the vision of really trying to make sure that people can actually experience some of these events remotely through the metaverse, which is a really cool kind of innovative use case for the metaverse, and for kind of blending in with these satellite events, which we were just talking about are incredibly popular and even more popular really than the conference in many cases. So just curious, you know, how are you feeling about the MetaMix as a concept? And just where are you going from here? What are your thoughts?
Full steam ahead. We're having our next event May 25th at the Brooklyn Navy Yard. It's going to be called Artcade. We have a video game art gallery with a gaming lounge right next to it. Just put that post up. I am super bullish about it. I know it's the future, right? Like it's internet cafes, right? But 3.0, we're going to be completely immersive. We're going to hang out with people globally the way we're doing it right now, right? But we're like going to feel like we're sitting next to each other, you know, in the same room. Like this week, Zuckerberg announced he's going to have holograms in the Ray-Ban Metas. You know what I mean? Like, we're going to be there, right? And if we can create an IRL space, that's going to be that third space where everyone goes to and hangs out. I mean, that's it, right? And it's all about just getting together, connecting with people that you fuck with, and, you know, having a good time. So I'm all about it. I'm still pushing forward, and I'm looking to hang out with you guys. That's really what's up,
you know? So you got to have fun with it to make it all worth it, you know? And that's what's up, man. Yeah. I'm showing that highlight video from the Sour Mouse event, which we also had the Pigeons of New York event showing up. We had different corners of the metaverse included on the screen. And so I think it's just a really cool kind of use case for what you're talking about there. And thanks again for joining, bro. And definitely, I dig the vision. We're all here for the vision, you know, and we're going to keep attending. What's up, Idris? Coming through with some interesting questions here. What do the panelists think about the Havening, of course, or Having, as it's supposed to be called? Any thoughts on the Havening and the marketplace? Maybe we'll turn it to you first, Liana. What are your thoughts on where we're going from here for Bitcoin and crypto?
let's ask one.
One, what are your thoughts on the Havening?
Listen, man, I think that it's a great time to be alive. I think that seeing the huge acceptance, I won't say mass adoption, but I will say the huge acceptance for crypto and Bitcoin specifically. It's kind of like this moment where I remember being that person that would go into different rooms and, you know, whether family or friends, and just being like talking about Bitcoin specifically and telling people about Bitcoin and crypto, you know, 2 years ago, and everybody just kind of looking at me like, oh, you know, like, this shit is a scam. It's a fad. It's something that, you know, it's not, it's, there's no longevity in this, you know, like, get your money out of there. Like, it's too risky. It's very volatile. To now being at this place where we're seeing Bitcoin hit all time highs. We're seeing, you know, even when it drops, it has a very solid support. You know, you look at what's happened in countries like Venezuela that have actually like made it their actual currency.
El Salvador. I mix them up too.
Yeah. I'm from New York. I'm like, we have like the Venezuelans coming in. So yeah, but El Salvador, you know, when you look at what's happening over there, you know, when you see the excitement behind it with their ETF and all the things that are happening, it's very much a real thing. And, you know, to see now, or to get those phone calls from people where it's like, yo, you see what's happening with Bitcoin, or how do I get in? And, you know, like, now I'm onboarding the same people that were sitting there telling me that, like, I was wasting my time and wasting my money. And, you know, I didn't know what I was doing and it was too speculative, to now seeing those people really kind of come to light and realize mm-hmm. that, you know, there's a difference between Bitcoin and crypto. You know, and Bitcoin is very much that thing that's going to kind of change how people look at traditional finance, you know, and so I'm excited. I'm really excited, you know, and even looking at the NFT space and seeing how Bitcoin has really like kind of pivoted to from this place mm-hmm. where it was like nobody really was talking about Bitcoin NFTs, you know, and then, you know, with the surge in inscriptions and the things that's happening with ordinals, and seeing a lot more of the volume go from ETH based NFTs to Bitcoin based NFTs, you know, it's exciting, because, you know, I look at people like Kane, for example, who, you know, was doing this before it was popular. So, you know, in a way he was kind of like, you know, like a trendsetter and a pioneer. And you know,
he got pulled in by Skrilla as well. Skrilla, oh geez.
Absolutely. You know, cause these guys were like, Bitcoin NFTs. They're not looking at anything anywhere else. And not necessarily that they're maxis, but just that they see the value in Bitcoin. And I think that that's important. You know, Bitcoin definitely holds a lot of weight. So that's my take on it.
I love it. That was an amazing take, bro. Yeah, I think that the people that have been really focused on the crypto art and in the blockchain and the Bitcoin space, like Skrilla and Kane, see that kind of immutability question, right? Where, you know, I still believe in Ethereum for the long term. I do think that those NFTs are going to be around for the long term. My Solana NFTs, which I have a growing bag of, you know, I'm a little less sure. I'm not going to lie. You know, if those VCs decide that they're done with the project and everything just goes under, I'm going to be like, oh shit, you know, there goes all my Sol NFTs. But the Bitcoin ones, to their credit, you know, as much as I even have my concerns about inscriptions and its impact on the network, and its impact on Bitcoin to actually be a digital currency, which seems to be falling by the wayside a little bit, you know, I do think that the inscriptions have brought a whole new kind of energy to the Bitcoin space. And shout out to the Skrilla and the Kane Mayfields and the Pork Chops, who were really all about crypto art on Bitcoin even before the inscriptions were a thing, right? And so inscriptions just really like made that technical connection even more, you know, really on chain with Bitcoin. So
really, even Bitmaps, you know, like the fact that Bitcoin shout out Jagar. Is the metaverse, you know, like shout out to Jagar, man. Jagar's been, you know, kind of like
on the Bitmaps.
Bitmaps is huge.
Yeah. So they even got a new metaverse coming out for the Bitcoin space. So yeah, definitely a place to watch. So the halving, the impact on Bitcoin in general is definitely going to be interesting to see. I think in the short term, there's going to be a lot of volatility. But long term, you know, if prior trends are any indication, there's a good chance that it's going to become a little more pricey to work in this Bitcoin space. And, you know, those who have assets on Bitcoin likely maybe going up in the future, you know, a year from now or so. But great points. Yeah. Liana, did you want to add anything on that, on the Bitcoin conversation?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a lot of brands that are adopting Bitcoin as a digital currency, right? You know, I see, you know, travel agents like accepting Bitcoin for purchase of tickets and stuff like that. So I think it's definitely really exciting. And it's being adopted by more people, you know, not necessarily like, you know, mass adoption, but just more people.
Yeah, it's becoming normalized.
More open to it, yeah.
Yeah, I think about that BlackRock guy, right? So this whole ETF conversation, which, you know, those of us who know, not your keys, not your crypto, hold your crypto in your own sovereign wallet. I'm not here to promote the ETF per se, but I will say, you know, it's been interesting to see how the institutional conversation around Bitcoin has been evolving. And of course, it really evolved just in the last 6 months a lot with America's approval of the Bitcoin ETFs. And I don't think that's any coincidence that that happened before the next halving, right? Or the next halving. I just keep wanting to call it the halving. I think that it's happening this way for a reason. And so the institutions now see the value. You now have this Larry Fink, I believe is his name, the CEO of BlackRock, saying that investing in Bitcoin is a rush to safety. So everyone knows that essentially the fiat dollar is continuing to inflate and continuing to be devalued by continuous printing for, you know, some would say valid reasons to support people and support the economy and make sure things don't just implode. But ultimately, this continuing printing of money is devaluing and creating more inflation. And so even Larry Fink, who just, you know, a year or two ago was very skeptical of Bitcoin, is now saying that investing in Bitcoin is a rush to safety. And basically, this whole digital gold narrative has definitely sunk in and seems to be taking off. So it'll be very interesting to see, you know, as the halving happens, you know, where things go from there and how the markets react, really. So I'm interested in that piece. I also think the ETF's an interesting option for those who have funds locked up that they can't otherwise use, but you can invest in something. In that case, you know, maybe it's not a horrible option, but not financial advice, to each their own. Rush to safety, Hexadized. Thanks for dropping in, man. Appreciate you. Andres, I don't know if you wanted to jump in on Bitcoin at all. Any thoughts?
Yeah, it's super interesting. I think politically, like what the ETF is doing, because right now we got the U.S. sanctioning, saying that, all right, like this is the thing that we're going to officially, you know, bless, then say this is the one that, right, like legally everyone throw your bags in here, like government stamped approved, ready to go. And I think if I'm not mistaken, Hong Kong, right, they just approved the Ethereum ETF right over there too.
Yeah, Bitcoin and Ethereum, like, I think, yeah. Which we also have here in Canada. Shout out to Canada. We've had it for about a year or two. We have both Ethereum and Bitcoin.
It's crazy. Like globally, like we're seeing this happen. We're seeing like millions of dollars all over the world now moving like formally into the space, right? Like with institutions really backing that. And again, politically, like that's really the push, right? Like out of all of this, right? Like all of this is imaginary. Nothing matters unless you have like actual human trust behind it, right? So, like I think that's the real like big deal. I can't wait to see what the markets do on Monday, right? When like the halving happened last night, right? When it opens up, I'm super curious to see what happens, just because it's here, it's real, you know, it's not going away, and I'm really curious to see, you know, what this does for the rest of the blockchains, right? Because now we have Bitcoin done, right? But Ethereum is next, right? And Ethereum is a completely different model of how it works, right? And are we going to approve that, right? And then how is that going to affect the rest of the ecosystem, right? Not just the currency itself, but all the dApps that are being built on top of it and every other company that's related to it too. So super interesting to watch, and I'm here for it.
100%, man. 100%. Yeah, I'm here for it too. And it's interesting how, to your point, you know, Hong Kong's like, all right, we're ready to go. Canada, you know, it's been a couple of years now, we got that ETF, and so we're aligned with it and the innovation, especially specifically Ethereum and Bitcoin. And so it's interesting how America's just been really dragging their feet. Even the Bitcoin thing, like if you actually read the breakdown, it sounded like Gary didn't even really want to approve it, right? It was just like begrudgingly kind of pulled into having to accept the Bitcoin ETF. And now there's a lot of rumors that they're going to do the same thing with Ethereum. You know, 2 months ago, everyone thought, oh, it's for sure going to get approved, no problem. Now it's all, oh, well, the SEC sounding like they don't really like it, and it's probably going to get tied up in litigation and all this. So I'm really interested in that whole convo too, man. And I'll be watching.
They don't have a choice.
Yeah. Well, that's what it seems like.
They last week or 2 weeks ago, the SEC just came out with their latest inflation report, right? The analyst report, and they underestimated it by like 2%, right? For the third month in a row, right? Like they can't even comprehend the way the economy is moving, how bad the shit's getting, right? Like they're desperate to find another solution that makes sense. And if other countries, right, who are being like, yeah, this makes sense for our economies, right? Americans not paying attention, like, oh, you know what, maybe we should follow suit too. So it's crazy, and I think it's gonna be a trickling effect. I think we're all gonna look for that out, right? And I think this might be the answer for it. So yeah. Stay tuned.
Hey, if BlackRock's calling it a rush to safety and they basically bankroll the whole economy, you know, clearly they see the trend on the wall as well.
Bitcoin's up 2.75% in the last 8 hours, so you know.
I'm waiting for the dip, man. I think there's gonna be a wild dip that's gonna just try to like shake loose. You know, they always try to manipulate the market a little bit like that. So I'm hoping there's this like short term dip, but who knows? Maybe it just goes parabolic and that's okay too. I got a little bit of a bag. I'm happy. It's good either way. appreciate this. It's a great conversation. Thank you, Idris, for the great question. I do want to get back to NFT NYC, but he has another really good question and I'm going to throw it to the group here and then we'll talk a little more on events as we wind down here. Awesome question. So he's saying, aside from banking the unbanked and kind of mining with relatively cheap electricity, what are the other hidden benefits that Bitcoin can present to marginalized people specifically? And so I'll just say, you know, when I think about Web3 warriors, and I think about the power of the blockchain, right? If you go to our Twitter, x.com/Web3Warriors, you'll see that our first tweet ever was Satoshi Nakamoto and the Bitcoin kind of concept, right? And the idea that Web3 and blockchain and decentralization has kind of cracked a code for finance and for moving money around the world, essentially, right? And so what really kind of pulled me into it is the idea that now you can take art or creativity on the blockchain, 3D assets, whatever it might be, attach it to the blockchain and sell that, and then keep the asset immutably into the future. So in the context of that whole new technology and what it represents for the world, you know, there's no limit to how I think Bitcoin and peer-to-peer technology can help marginalized people, marginalized communities. You know, we've had Owo on the show from Nigeria and looking at how, you know, the Afro Droids project helped build a school in Nigeria for girls. You know, we've talked to Kofi from Ghana and his 3D African mask sales helped him invest in a local technology school there. Jagar out in India, you know, selling a lot of 3D assets on Bitmap and now supporting his local community of artists and really trying to give back to his community there. So I really think, you know, beyond just Bitcoin, the blockchain and peer-to-peer technology is for the marginalized people, right? Is for the communities like El Salvador, right? Who saw like the IMF is basically milking them, is basically, you know, charging them all kinds of crazy interest and they need a way out of it. And they've invested in Bitcoin now for however many years. They're now getting the yield on it. And I believe they already paid off their IMF debt or their World Bank debt or whatever the case might be. So those are just like 3-4 examples of, you know, blockchain, not just Bitcoin, but blockchain helping the marginalized people. And in El Salvador's case, specifically Bitcoin, really making a huge impact and difference. So maybe I'll throw it to you, Liana, and then I'd love to hear anyone else's thoughts on it. But how do you think, you know, Bitcoin and blockchain can really help marginalized people around the world?
Well, I would say more like a blockchain technology, right? So, you know, for example, it's helping in terms of fundraising for humanitarian crisis. So I've raised money through blockchain technology for Afghanistan, and that's really helped, you know, put 16 girls into schools, nice. Which is pretty unheard of.
Amazing.
You know, and we've also managed to feed like about 100 families during the fall of Kabul when banks were shut. No one could access any of their assets or their money. So we use blockchain technology to funnel the money to them. Amazing. And we've managed to feed like, you know, 100 families, provided basic necessities to them for like about 3 months. That's one of the highlight for me, you know, in terms of using blockchain technology.
That's amazing. Yeah, shout out to, I think it was NFTs for Humanity, or I don't know, what group were you working with on that? But I remember like right when the America kind of pulled out of Afghanistan. Pardon?
Yeah, Stand Up for Unity.
Stand Up for Unity. Right. Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. Right when that whole kind of pull out of American troops out of Afghanistan happened and the Taliban was essentially given free rein, and it was a gong show. I think it's still kind of a gong show, frankly, but
yeah,
especially at that initial point when there was just a lot of questions, banks were getting shut down, nobody knew what was happening, and a lot of people were falling in the cracks. everything you just mentioned is super inspiring. And I do remember hearing tidbits of it. And then, yeah, it's just amazing that you were able to do that. And there was an NFT collection connected to that as well. Like you sold art to raise funds.
Yeah, we sold art to raise funds. And and really it's still one of my best memory of an experience of you know, being in Web3. Because you can see the tangible results, right? And how much good it can do. And you know, the girls, 16 girls that we've put in schools, like they've graduated and they're working now, which is great, right?
Amazing.
So yeah, I mean, I just love, like, you know, being able to use technology to help people.
Amazing, amazing. I love it. Yeah. Great use cases. Yeah. One, any thoughts on that? Bitcoin for the marginalized people?
I think even, all right, so like even just having something that, having control over something that you don't need, you know, regulators to oversee, you know, like if I want to send money to, you know, to a charity or to an organization, you know, depending on the amount of money, you know, there's generally like red tape. You know, if I want to send $1 million to an organization and I want to just do that, you know, it's like you have to get approval from your bank, and these are assets and money that's yours, you know, where with Bitcoin, you know, if I want to send however amount of money I want to send to whatever organization, charity, you know, I can just do that right then and there. You know, I don't have to consult with anyone. I don't have to, you know, sign any paperwork. There's no, you know, red tape or, you know, any of that. And I think just having control over your resources and being able to contribute to any place is without having to, you know, worry about, you know, any type of any hurdles is important, right? You know, especially in a time of crisis or a time of need, when, you know, when you have people that are in dire need of resources, you know, to be able to kind of like rush to aid is important. And I think that Bitcoin is the perfect solution. A blockchain, like look at how many times, you know, when you look at these charitable organizations, like, you know, not knocking like the Red Cross, right? But, you know, if you donate X amount of money to the Red Cross, how much of that money actually goes towards, you know, the actual people that need those resources, right? How do we track this? There's no, you know, you can't go through their books and see how much of that money actually went towards whatever case it is. Where with blockchain technology, it's like all of this information is on a public ledger that everyone can see. So now it becomes a matter of we're playing cards face up now. You know, it's a whole different game. There's now, we don't have to worry. It's not about trust, because there's no trust when it comes to finances. Let's be honest, you know. So now it's very much like we're playing open source. And I think that level of transparency creates a different level of, okay, now these funds have to go where they're allocated to, because we're all playing in a transparent, you know, in a transparent world where, you know, traditionally you just have to trust that the money that you send to the Red Cross is going to go to aid those people. And you don't know that, you know, it's very much kind of like you're rolling the dice, where with blockchain, you know, because everything is very much transparent, you know, we're seeing a different level of accountability. And I think that in itself is powerful.
1,000%.
And also, I think, like, you know, if all the banks are shut, what are you going to do? How are you going to get your money, right?
And honestly, in some cases, that might be best case scenario, because at that point, it's like people have nothing left to use but crypto. Like, then everybody's going to have to use crypto because their banks are unreliable.
Well, it's happened in the past. Look at the Great Depression. The Great Depression came from banks just calling out and not necessarily having people's money.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, we have to understand that these banks aren't looking out for our best interest. They're taking our money. They're doing whatever they need to finagle to make money off of our money. Right. You know, they give you 1% if you're lucky, you know, and then I remember when I was a kid, it was like, put your money in the bank, it'll gain interest. And that was the deception. The deception was, you know, put your money in the bank because your money will make you money. Now, you know, having control of your assets is the power play, because now it's like, I can put my money in Bitcoin, and depending on when I got in, you know, I have a better chance of, forget interest. I mean, like, I've seen people make life-changing money just putting their money in Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I would trust Bitcoin or even some of these other cryptocurrencies over a bank any day.
And to your point, it comes down to transparency and accountability. And we know you're not going to get that kind of transparency in banks, or at least most banks. So, great points all around, 100%. Andres, do you want to chime in on that at all? Bitcoin for the marginalized and for society?
I got a little FUD.
I went to hear it. Bringing in the FUD. Okay, here we go.
It's got to be talked about because I'm hearing regulations like they're going to tax miners 30%, right? And in order to keep on marginalizing the marginalized, right, like that's a political play that can very realistically happen, right? Not just here, but all over the world, right? Depending on what it is that you're doing in the space, you can hit up ISPs and like watch people's traffic and then start marginalizing from there too. So I bring it up only to bring awareness to it because we got to figure out ways to work around it when the time comes, when it's for real. You know what I mean? So I'm here for it. I 100% agree with both Liana and One's points. It's just something that we gotta like think about, right? Because if this is the space that we're playing in, right, someone's gonna want to take control. You know what I mean? So that's my two cents.
1,000%. Yeah.
Great point.
I will say on the piece of the FUD as well that looking at the organizational piece, right, and being able to support them is one piece, but most of those organizations are, you know, having audits basically with fine-tuned comb. And when they get a million or a $500,000 Bitcoin donation, yes, they'll be able to off-ramp it into their local fiat and use it. But that process of off-ramping it and being able to use it, and then actually you do have to essentially report where it came from. Now, the person sending it maybe doesn't have to provide too much information, but it gets into all this regulatory stuff, and that goes into my kind of day job and payments, but it is a thing, you know, there's a pain point there for sure. So being able to send the money is an important piece of it, and being able to do it quickly, efficiently, transparently is huge. So that's definitely a great use case, but the organization receiving it then has to go through, you know, being able to use it in their local jurisdiction, which can be a little bit difficult depending where they're at, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So, Liana, you probably faced a little bit of that on the Afghanistan piece, right?
Well, we had people on the ground that we just sent directly, you know.
And they were off-ramping stuff, right?
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. So, I mean, like, but they, you know, they had to be really careful as well, right? You know, so, yeah.
No
so
doubt.
We couldn't send huge amount in one go. We had to, like, you know, just send it, like, trickle it down because as not to cause any alarm or like red flags and so
nobody gets this kind of money in Afghanistan or like how are you getting this kind of thing. It's like gets flagged pretty quick, I guess.
Fascinating
stuff. Idris, appreciate the questions, you know, on the back of the havening or the having. That's a great conversation to have, so I do appreciate that, Idris. And anyone else with questions, feel free to drop them in the chat. Appreciate all y'all. Shout out Hexadized, shout out everybody joining us in the chat. Bringing it back to NYC as we wind down here, I know we're crossing the 1 hour mark. Hopefully my friends are cool to stick around for a minute. So I did want to mention, because you talked about kind of how quiet it was, and I had mentioned it off the top as well, how kind of sparsely populated it was, like not very many booths. Out of all the booths there, frankly, the only brand I recognized was Monaverse. And shout out to the Monaverse, doing some pretty cool stuff in the metaverse and really giving people the tools to create their own metaverse spaces. You know, we had Coralverse on the last episode with Z Creative, and they've built out a really cool kind of ocean conservation corner of the metaverse. So shout out to Mona, but I just thought it was interesting that that was literally the only brand that I actually recognized walking through that entire place, besides obviously NFT NYC themselves. So I think that said a lot. And to your other point about the culture and everyone seeing more of the value in the satellite events, I think it's on the NFT NYC team to make that not the case, right? And to bring the culture back into the convention somehow. And maybe they don't need that much space, like you were saying. Maybe they do bring it back to Midtown or Times Square and make it a little bit more flashy and a little bit more exclusive, maybe, whatever the case might be. But yeah, I just wanted to throw that in there because it was sad, frankly. It was kind of sad to see. And the way that they kind of like lionized this one billionaire who kind of bankrolled their whole event was also kind of icky, I thought. It was a little weird.
Yeah, I think, you know, they should collaborate with like the side events as well, right?
Right. Give a little bit of sponsorship money and then like they'll throw them a bone in return, you know, it could make a huge difference, right?
Yeah. Exactly. And we're here not to compete, right? You know, we're here to collaborate. So
that's
That's
the Web3 ethos. Collaboration over competition, right? And shout out to Eric Spivak as well. I want to give him a shout out. He had some awesome satellite events. And he also was given a stage for his kind of brand, A New Friendship Tech, at the actual conference. And so he did kind of play a little bit of both sides and was able to kind of see the value in the satellite events, but also trying to, you know, acknowledge that NFT NYC in the end did kind of bring everyone there, started the culture of being there every year and really, you know, collaborating around it. So I don't think any of us want to see it fail and kind of die, right? So I'll just give a shout out to Eric too, because I know he was doing a lot of stuff at both events, both the main event and the side events that he was helping out with. Andres, you wanted to jump in there?
No, I was gonna say, take that soundbite. Make sure NFT NYC sees this shit.
I'm gonna send this whole episode to their team. Be like, here, you're welcome. You're welcome, guys. Take it or leave it. Take it or leave it. for real, though. All right. So I did want to get a little. Sorry, Juan, you're jumping in.
Oh, I was just gonna say, I was happy that they incorporated music performances this year. That they actually had Web3 based musicians playing at the at the artist pavilion. I thought that was, you know, a good take on adopting the music NFT space, because last year there was no music representation. I feel like music NFTs kind of gets brushed over in the conversation. So you know, shout out to God Cloud, shout out to Darius, shout out to a lot of the other artists that actually put on for the music NFT community.
Shout out to Creatress and Crux from Stones and Crux, and also Eunice. I met Eunice out there, so they had an awesome performance. Actually, the three of those ladies did amazing. They really killed it. So good point on the stage for sure. The music was pretty awesome to see.
I mean, also, like, you know, the art, you know, the way they displayed the art and how you can, you know, find the specific art that you want and then, you know, just have it on the display units, right? That was really clever. But at the same time, then it kind of made the other walls really empty, you know? I think they should have had like everything.
The whole thing painted in art, right? Yeah. Like I think it was interesting because I remember Pilar mentioned this, I think going back 2 or 3 years where they had like no art and it was just really shocking, you know? So I think this art display they had this year is pretty much the same one they had last year, and it was an improvement on basically no art that they had before that. But when I look at the space, and like, we know that there's artists in the space just wanting to be seen, wanting to be acknowledged, and there's just no shortage of amazing, beautiful art. So why wouldn't you just line your like entire event with art, or at least the one main like VIP room, like make it super immersive and just like plaster the art everywhere, you know? I don't get it, but
I mean, they have a relationship with Metasil. I don't see why Metasil couldn't have donated or even just rented them, you know, 100 token displays and just have token displays all through the artist pavilion, because outside of, like, you know, to Liana's point, outside of that one area, which kind of became almost like a competition, you know, you had people lined up to queue up art on these screens.
Yeah, it was weird.
Where instead of kind of just spreading it out and making it something where, like, now if you want to see the artist's art that you came to see, you know, you have to walk through the venue. You know, you have to like look for it and kind of explore the venue instead of kind of having everybody centralized in this one area behind the music
stage. Behind the stage, which was awkward. You had a bunch of people talking and hanging out behind the stage. Like,
oh, it was crazy. Yeah. So, like, you know, it's just you have the space. You have, I mean, the venue is huge. Even if it is just in that room where the artist pavilion is, you know, but add more token displays. You have these giant walls, and there's like one little screen here, one little screen there, and then everything is on that big main wall in the back, and it kind of creates this cluster of people that are all kind of like trying to do the same thing, instead of kind of like spreading out the art a little more, or having more what do you call that? Stations like that one station in particular, having multiples.
Yeah.
So that, way, you know, kind of people are moving around and there's not this, you know, line and crowd for people to kind of take pictures of people's art.
Yeah, it was a real bottleneck at one point, you know. Yeah, and it's really awkward as well, right? Because you're trying to get, like, you know, the artwork up on the screen, and you've got a couple of artists, you know, who aren't there and who is requested, and you see this queue, and you feel so pressured to, like, just hurry up.
Yeah, it's not the best experience when you're waiting in the queue to just see some art, you know. And now they even have like these displays. I don't know if Token has it, but I know Wim, I believe, has the where you can do wireless kind of setups where you just like connect to their app and you'd actually be able to like see. I think it's basically what they're doing through that station, but make it more like democratized where you can do it, like you said, kind of on multiple screens and actually just sync up right with your app. So you don't have to stand at like one station and you can just select which art you want to see on the screen through your app. I mean, I think that would be cool. Maybe it becomes a little bit complicated with a lot of people trying, but again, if there's enough screens,
even just rotating art, you know, like maybe like kind of like art that just rotates continuously so that way, you know, it gives people incentive to kind of like stay in that area and wait for that art to queue up. And not just kind of have this thing where, cause I mean, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the One Love DAO. But like they basically they're a group of people that it's about artists supporting artists, and they have it's a Tez based community, and they have a international artists from all over the world, and so it was kind of cool because I saw a lot of those artists had submitted art to NFT NYC, and the founders of that DAO were actually at that station, you know, queuing up all of the artists' art so that even if they weren't there, you know, they're in another country, you know, they still had some type of digital representation of their art. They had someone there taking pictures of their art. So they were actually in that area for hours, you know, just kind of taking pictures and documenting art for these artists. So, you know, I'm sure that for people like that, that are there to kind of like show support and give artists from other countries, you know, representation, you kind of need a little more space, you know, because you had a plethora of people just tied into this one little area. And you know, it got very congested at one point, you know, where like I was there for a bit just to kind of like snap some pictures for artists just like everyone else was, but but then it was like, all right, I'm getting claustrophobic, I need to get away from here, there's too many people. It got like you know, like everybody, and it's something that's meant to be a pleasant experience can become very overwhelming very quick.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Definitely.
100%. Yeah. I think they could definitely handle that a little bit better. But it was good to see art there at least. And so we'll see what they do next year. Maybe they get a little more innovative with it. I think that it's easy. Like even thinking about the satellite event we had at Sour Mouse, and I was a little disappointed in how I was able to kind of pull together the art for the art display. Like it's easy for it to become kind of an afterthought, and you think it's a super easy thing, right? Like you just kind of throw up a slideshow video or something and it's going to stay on there, but there's a lot of like AV considerations to think about. We also had this space that I'm showing on the screen right now as a digital art space. We did use it at the actual conference, but at the satellite event we were looking to set it up through VR and there were problems. We'll just leave it at that, but you know, like, so there's a lot of things.
So they hear it spatial. You gotta fix your shit. Voxels, you gotta get on it. And the whole metaverse tech, if you're trying to put art and you're trying to bring our communities into here, make sure your shit works.
In the VR specifically. It's true. We're out here trying to onboard people into the VR, and it was very clunky and not as seamless as we were hoping. But with that, I was going to say, you know, a little bit more testing and maybe even reaching out to Spatial and kind of saying, you know, this is what we're looking to do. What's the best way to do it? Because I'm sure I've heard that there is a good VR option in Spatial, and I think it's just a little bit more, it should be a little easier to do for sure. So anyway, just leaving it at that, because I'm just saying displaying art can be under appreciated, you know, and to Liana, who's a real curator, you know, I'm sure she can speak to that more. There's a skill to it for sure, and it shouldn't be underestimated, I would say, right?
Yeah, definitely. And also, like, you know, I'd love to see different ways of displaying the art, right? Mm-hmm. At the moment, it's just, you know, really static and just experimenting with different kinds of display and using different materials, maybe, you know.
No doubt. We'll see. We'll see what they do for the next year. All right.
To see some projection mapping. Something a little more, or even, you know, in 2021 for NFT NYC, they had Coinbase had this giant wall. It was like an interactive wall, and you can kind of like create your own static glitch event. I mean, a glitch kind of like motion glitch thing. And, you know, they allowed people to come up and kind of create their own glitch scene. And then you stood in front of it. They had an assistant there that would take a picture and a small video of you in front of your, you know, whatever, this the thing that you designed. And it was very interactive. And I thought that that was really dope because that was my first NFT NYC. But there wasn't any art outside of that big display, you know, and to see how they've pivoted to showing art, but like now there's a lack of these interactive, you know, Web3 experiences. We have so much tech. I don't know why they didn't have Apple Vision Pros for augmented reality, why there weren't, there's a lack of Oculuses, you know, why they're not incorporating more of this tech that we have. I haven't seen a Po app in years. I'm not even gonna lie. Like,
it's nonsense. It's because they didn't hire us, the Web3 Warriors, to produce NFT NYC. But it's okay. We'll forgive them. Next year, they can take care of us, and we'll do it right for them. Don't worry.
There you go.
There's so much here in the space. There's augmented reality. There's so many things that we can use, you know, to create more of an experience. Yeah. People are paying hundreds of dollars to come to this freaking conference. And, like, there's no bundle with hotel accommodations. There's no flight discounts. They're, like, when you think about other conferences, right, like, usually, yeah, there's like some, it's like, yo, buy a ticket and we have a promotion where if you stay at this hotel or if you fly this particular airline, you know, there's accommodations. And I feel like NFT NYC has kind of become this cash grabby thing where it's like, well, you know, if you want to, this is where the Web3 space is, pay $500 to get in the door and we're going to give you free sandwiches and coffee.
They didn't even have free sandwiches. I had to pay for mine. they had it in the VIP room. Like, but the free stuff they were giving away was horrible. Okay. The stuff on the main floor that you paid for was actually good sandwiches. The stuff they were giving away for free in that VIP, I was like, no, thank you. You know, and it was tiny too. You know,
and especially if it's like been sitting out there, right?
Right.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I said the coffee was good at least.
Yeah, they had the real espresso.
Yeah. Coffee was good. But also I felt they didn't really cater for people with disabilities, right? Mm. It wasn't very accessible. So I think that's something that they should look into because, you know, we can't exclude, you know.
Good point for sure. 100%. All right. Awesome conversation, everybody. I'm really appreciating this, and I could talk about this probably all day, but I do want to respect everyone's time and maybe wind down here, but I got to get to the key question that each of us, and I know, getting real late for you, Liana, I apologize.
Yeah.
the key question, you know, why? I'm going to start with you, Liana. Why is it important to meet up in real life at Web3 events? You know, what is the kind of the real value that you get out of it? And what are you looking forward to in the future as far as attending Web3 events? But why is it valuable?
Well, I think it's really important to try and connect in the physical, right? Because you can only do so much when it's just audio, you know, and through your phone and screens. When you connect in the physical, I think there's also that energy that comes with it, you know. So for me, I think you know, meeting up in the physical and connecting that way, it definitely creates a kind of experience, right? Like that's really memorable and it's really tangible, you know, and that will stick with you for life, really, you know, because like I know for a fact, like, you know, this trip is definitely going to be with me for life.
No doubt. You know,
2 hours to the Oculus.
While you're talking about the memories, we do have to mention the sweater that's behind you. F.U. Kane has an epic story, you know. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it and what inspired it. And then Kane legit said it was the highlight of his trip. And he had a lot of pretty impressive things he did on the trip. So, you know, he really loved that sweater. Give us a little bit of the story of the F.U. Kane sweater.
Well, I mean, it was really funny because I was speaking to Kaz, and you know, it was from the Would You Rather space, right? And Kane came in, and I think he was telling us about like how people would just go like at some point, it's like fuck you, Kane. And I was like, you know, I was in the back channel with us, like, oh my god, that would be such a great T-shirt.
But you didn't so just
initially
say
it was going to be a T-shirt. But then now, you know, like I'm so glad I made it as a hoodie because I would have been freezing.
No doubt. Ended up coming in handy, right? And that looked pretty big too. It looked a little big on you, but it made it that much better.
Yeah. I like it big, you know?
No doubt.
So it's like a bit cozy. Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah. And it was styling, you know, I guess that's real art. We were saying you got to create a shop, you know, you're going to have all the Kane Mayfield fans going through. And he gave you, I believe he gifted you a record as well. I'm looking at the vinyl here of Dust, a historic Bitcoin infused album. Shout out to Kane Mayfield. Yo, Juan Montez got his own Dust copy as well. That is so dope.
That one's for you, Kane.
There you go. Shout out Kane Mayfield. He had an amazing time in NYC performing, doing stand-up, connecting with Skrilla, selling some art for Bitcoin at an actual Pepe auction, IRL. So that's what it's all about, for sure. Amazing. So that's a great point, Liana, on why it's important to connect. Any other thoughts?
That's about it, I guess, you know, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's always good to, you know, match the, you know, face to name and the voice, right? We were talking about this, one, that how, you know, everyone is kind of like, okay, at least we know these people and they're exactly the same as they are, you know, in real life and you know, on audio spaces, right?
Right.
So that was really good. Yeah.
For genuine people, you know, and Liana, you and I go back to initial Dream Conduit team, you know, and even before Dream Conduit, just hanging out in Clubhouse and Blockchain Gospel and all that good stuff. So it was definitely amazing to be able to meet you in real life and hoping you're able to attend next year as well. And we can continue, you know, building year over year in New York and New York, you know, just the energy and, you know, shout out to Juan and Andres out there. You know, it's just like everyone's just so focused on go, you know, build. What are we doing next? What are we looking forward to in the future? And it's just like a whole other mind space. And like, you know, Andres says he's still recovering and Liana was saying, you know, you had to take some recovery time and me too. Dude, for sure. Yeah. But it's amazing what gets done. And I really appreciate it. So great points, Liana. Yeah. Thanks for sharing. Juan Montez, what are your thoughts on why it's important to connect IRL? And what does it mean for the Web3 space?
I think when it comes to IRL, it's just really solidifying relationships that have been forged online, right? Like for all of us, we've all kind of been in these spaces and talking with each other for some of us it's been years, you know. And that initial, like, I remember the first time I met you, Dave. Like, I remember like being outside of NFT NYC, and I think like you were like lighting up a J, and I was wearing like this immutable shirt, this sweater, and then we kind of just like, and you're like, I know you, and I'm like, yeah, I know you, and then we kind of like started talking, and you know, like, and I think that that's really what it boils down to, right? It's like that moment of like, I remember like the first time I met Lo, the first time I met Natalie, you know, meeting Cass, meeting Pilar, meeting Liana, even, you know, with Metadre, you know, like those like core memories, you know, kind of like really solidify relationships that have kind of been building up for years, you know, and it's funny to kind of have these moments where it's like, I have friends that I've never met. You know, meeting a friend for the first time.
I know.
You know, like
it's weird, right? It's weird.
It is. It's a really new thing. You know, it's like one of these like post-COVID phenomenons where now it's like, you know, because of something like Clubhouse, you know, like that we were able to really forge these bonds with people all over the world, you know, like, and have relationships with people that, like, I called Jagar from fucking India, like, and he'll answer the phone anytime, you know, like, I have a 3D printing question, I have a question about ordinals, I have a question about bitmaps, you know, like, to have access to a global network of people that are like-minded, that have these, you know, that have access to information and can help you, and then have an opportunity to meet these people finally, you know, it's like, it's priceless. And it holds so much value. And, you know, I think that that's why these events are important, even if it's not for the conference, even if it's not to, you know, go and experience these conversations or this artwork, you know, just to go and say, hey, so-and-so is going to be in town. Oh, I need to be there. You know, like I was excited last year when you guys did the event in Bushwick, you know, because it was kind of, for me, it was like a reunion, but like, you know, like with these people, like Earplug was there. Ifeoma was there. I'm saying her name wrong.
Sasha.
You know, Ifeoma. Yeah, Sasha was there. Ebro, Low, you know, like all of Dr. Lemony, like it's like to kind of be in that energy, right? Where it's like, oh my God, I've been talking to all of these people for so long and now to be in front of them. And it's like that vibe and that chemistry and that feeling, it's really unmatched, you know? And I think that that's the value of IRL. That's the value of bringing people together. I still remember the first IRL event that I kind of like put together for my community, and having people that have never seen each other, but are just listening to each other. Like I remember people like, oh my God, I know that voice. You're so-and-so. And, you know, like, or, you know, people just kind of being flabbergasted because it's kind of like, oh my God, you look nothing like how you sound. Like but mix, you know what I'm saying? Kane called me as soon as he met Mix, right? Like, they met up before I got to meet Kane, and he called me. He's like, yo, I have to tell you, because you're the only person that understands, Mix looks nothing like and exactly like he sounds at the same time. He's like, and I don't know who else to tell because no one else has met him yet except for you. So it's kind of like, you know, moments and conversations like that to me are priceless, because, you know, you can't you can't really put a word on the feeling of having that first encounter with somebody that you've built this huge relationship with and seeing them. Like the fucking hug that Kane gave me, you know what I'm saying? Like when he saw me, he was like, oh, come here, bro. Like, and then like the other day he called me, he was like, yo, I didn't get to tell you, but it was fucking great meeting you. Like I like there's been so much, you know, like there's so much hype from, you know, like we're all still recovering from it, but you know, like, it was like, yo, it was great to like be around you guys, you know, and that to me is the very long-winded version of why these IRL events are important.
Yeah, it was legit. Yeah,
it definitely takes the connection to another level, right? You know, and that's what matters.
Yeah, and I think about the fact that a lot of the, when we talk about adoption and bringing in new people, this is where kind of the rubber hits the road, right? Because it's like those of us who are all connected, I think back to when we all walked in there and Kane Mayfield was like, oh, it's the homies, you know, and he's just like, like we know each other, right? Even though he was meeting all of us IRL, I think, for the first time, right? So it was pretty cool to just like, have that familiarity. But to your point, I think there's also, you know, whether it's at these events or at the actual conference, the fact that there are people who have very low level of knowledge, especially when it comes to NFTs in the metaverse, not necessarily crypto, that see us who are kind of like, I would say, natives to the space, essentially having fun, building, connecting, and they're like, oh, like there's more to this than just like number go up, or, you know, what's my NFT gonna 10x for me, you know? It's like it's actually helping artists and supporting people's creativity and pushing things forward. So yeah, that's what I think is really, really exciting, and definitely won everything you said. I got this shot of us with Kane at the bar on the screen right now. An amazing memory. We got Liana in the shot. We got Mix and Sasha hiding out in the back. Kane, Juan Montez, and myself really enjoying PubKey. And PubKey is cool because that's a bar where they actually accept Bitcoin payments for drinks and everything. So it's actually a very pro Bitcoin bar. So that was an amazing memory. Amazing. 100%. Yeah.
It's funny, right? Speaking of like meeting people IRL, I was sitting at PubKey and Kane and Mix had stepped outside to smoke, and I'm sitting at the bar and I'm watching people pay for their food and drinks with Bitcoin. And this guy next to me, he kind of looks at me, goes, do you believe this? They're spending their Bitcoin on appetizers and beers. And I was kind of like, yo, that's dope. You know, like the fact that there's an actual like real world use for your Bitcoin? He goes, no, you spend fiat. You hold your Bitcoin. You hodl that shit. And I looked over and I understand that sentiment, right? So I kind of look over and I'm like, yo, man, I'm one. What's your name? He goes, I'm Hodl Pig. And I'm like, holy shit, you're fucking Hodl Pig.
The Hodl Pig, the legend.
Bro, and I was like, oh my God. And I was like, it's Montez. And he goes, oh, come in. And he had like this fucking amazing accent. He fucking like put his arm over me and he goes, we hodl Bitcoin, we spend fiat. And I was like, yes.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It was amazing, man. I'll tell you. That was awesome.
Andres, let me turn it over to you before we wrap up here. What are your thoughts on why it's important to kind of meet up IRL at these Web3 events, and how are you feeling about it into the future?
He gets to meet his auntie.
Right?
Oh my God. It was a pleasure. No, for real though, it's so the reason that we're all here, right? And I'm thinking about it while you guys are talking, is love, right? Like, we love to just do the shit that we do. And an extension of that, right? We start then loving the people who also love doing the shit that we do. And when we get together, that love is amplified, right? We're like, we don't judge you for nothing, how you look, right? It's just literally like, yo, you love? Yeah, all right, let's do it. Let's just jump in and just grow it and amplify it. So you don't have to be there, obviously, right? But when you do get together, it just amplifies it and it just makes it that much stronger. And I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Let's go.
Oh, man. And also, I'm so glad, like, I managed to get those little like stickers and stuff for everyone.
Look at got mine right here. Check it out.
Awesome.
Still rocking it on here because I haven't decided where I'm gonna pin them up, but I love the art and they're so beautiful. Especially the scarab. I was actually gonna ask you about that. Is that like inspired by some Egyptian symbolism, or are you
mm-hmm.
Has some Egyptian vibes. You want to share a little bit about that?
Yeah, actually, that was the first art, like, you know, I think last year, I kind of experienced a pretty bad burnout, like, to the point, like, I couldn't even do art, which was really scary, right? Mm. So I didn't do art for, like, what, six months, like, yeah, more than that. And then once I kind of, like, you know, got into a much better headspace, the scarab was the first thing that I drew. So, nice. And it's very appropriate because scarabs also like resurgence, resilience, and, you know, just reinventing and, you know, transformation, right?
So, I love it. Yeah. I love it. That's amazing. I'm glad I asked. You. Get that symbolism in there. I'm a big fan of Egyptian history in general, but I did not know the scarab meant those things. So that's great. I'm glad we were able to get that in there. I had a lot of other questions, frankly, to discuss, but I want to let Liana get some sleep. I know, one, Montez, you're looking forward to Toronto, ETH Toronto Blockchain Futurist event. We're going to connect out there. I'm still working on all the logistics, but I'm 90% confident I will get out there. So that's exciting. Any other Web3 events? Maybe Liana, do you have a Web3 event you're looking forward to in the near or distant future? Any plans?
Well, I hope to get to the ETH. What was it? The Futurist
Blockchain Futurist in Toronto? Yeah. Oh, that'd be amazing. Nice. Yeah, that'd be so nice. Cool. Get to welcome you to Canada. Let's go. Have you been to Canada before?
A long time ago, when I was 12.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's been it's been a while. So I need tour guides.
I got you. We got Kush out there too. Kush was my tour guide when I went to Toronto. He showed me all the good Chinese spots for like 3 a.m. You know.
Amazing.
Kush was dope, man. Yeah. It was good connecting with him out there. We had fun in Toronto. Toronto was definitely like a turn up.
For sure.
Amazing. Yeah, and then I'm also speaking at a conference in Frankfurt in September. So,
oh, nice. Congrats.
Yeah, so hopefully, like, you know, I get to do Toronto and then Frankfurt.
Awesome. Well, I hope we get to connect out there. That's dope. Montez, anything on the radar looking forward to?
We got Bitcoin Pizza Day coming up, of course. So there'll be a bunch of pizza parties, and I'll probably be connecting with the people over at Pizza Dow, seeing what they're doing over there. And May 25th, I'll be popping up to the arcade event.
Let's go.
With the MetaMix and the and Vita TV and everybody over there. So, but right. Yeah, listen, I'm always open to when anytime something comes across my radar, I kind of just like I'm very spontaneous. So I'll just pop out to, you know, anything that really looks like it can be valuable and looks like there's good quality people there. So
you're lucky. You're spoiled for choice out in New York. You know, you got like crypto. You got Crypto Mondays. Mm-hmm. You got the Bronx Crypto. You got all this Bitcoin community groups out there. Even though crypto itself is not that easy to get in New York, frankly. But you know,
no, it's really not, man. Well, luckily, I live in Jersey. Right. So, but I'm like right outside of New York. So I, but you know, being born and raised in New York, it's just it's. There's ways to get it. It's just not as easy outside of New York. I mean, inside of New York, inside you know, New York, so.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned being on the other side of the river. I was walking through the Bronx with Andres and Dr. Lemney. Shout out Dr. Lemney. And at one point we were looking over the river. We were like, yeah, that's where one lives over there. Like pointing over at some apartment or some buildings over on the other side. Right, that's Jersey.
Right across the river, literally.
I was like, oh, okay, cool. Just getting it all, getting the full tour. That's amazing, man. And yeah. Andres, lastly, I know you got the Artcade going down on May 25th. I know you're always building for the MetaMix and trying to pull some events together. Anything else you want to mention that you're looking forward to in the near distant future for Web3 events?
I'm looking for people to grow with now. I want to start forming Voltron and get everyone who's involved in the space together. Like we all got to fucking come up together with this. That's the only way it's going to work. Like I was talking with Smarts from Pigeons and Vita TV, obviously his community, Bronx Crypto. Like it's time to fucking get together. If you're out in New York and you're listening to this, or if you're anywhere in the world, and you're trying to build, hit me up. Hit Montez up. Leanna, David. We're all here to fucking go.
Let's go.
Thank you.
Leanna's in.
Thank you.
Appreciate you. Leanna's in Southeast Asia. I'm up here in Canada. We got one and Andres in New York. We got Kush in Toronto. We got Low Sleazy down in Miami. You know, got a lot of connections all over the space.
That's it, man.
It's amazing. So it's very exciting. And we're going to keep building out here. Thank you to all the listeners. Appreciate you. Thanks for being here. We're going to let Leanna get some rest. Appreciate everybody tuning in. Till next time, I will be off next week for a family commitment. So 2 weeks from now, we're going to have episode 99 with Crux and Stones. Looking forward to that. It's going to be exciting. So till then, peace out, everybody. Catch you in the metaverse. Thank you, Leanna, Juan, Andres.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, guys. Love you.
Love you guys. Peace.
Let's go.